think about cheese? Make your thoughts cheesier. Now add 100% chicken breast fillet, chipotle sauce and a mega cheese melt. And it's giving the new cheesy chicken stack at McDonald's. Did we mention it's cheesy?
Cheese.
Available until the 4th of Jan 2026 from 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Subject to availability.
When we go through awakenings, or perhaps when we train our minds to sit, stay, leave it, and then heal, we usually do this in private. What happens when we feel called out back into society? We're a little bit different. We're going to be treating the world differently. And people who know us aren't really going to recognize us. So how do we do that? Today's guest is Phyllis Coletta. She is the author of How to Be a Good Dog, which is about training your puppy mind. And she is back to let us know some tips and tricks about socialization back into community after learning how to sit, stay, leave it, and heal. Before we get started, I just want to say thank you to Dr. Bradley Nelson, iHeartRadio, for your sponsorship. And to our audience and listeners, please do not forget to like and subscribe. Phyllis, it's great to have you back. This is the last part of your book. And this is probably one of the most important. I don't know. I think it's all important. What do you think?
I do. But, you know, what's the point of having a meditation practice, a stillness practice, if you're not going to bring it out there into the world? You know, what's the point? So it is in my mind. Yeah. I mean, it's all important. But this is like the first part of the book is just about the basics, the rules of puppy training we've talked about, like discipline, love, and all the things you're going to bring to yourself and your own practice in trying to calm, you know, train your mind to listen to the alpha. The second part of the book is like how do you sit, stay, leave it, heal. But now today we're going to talk about, all right, so you're starting to transform and you're going out there into your various packs, you know, your puppy packs, like your family, your friends, your world, your work, what happens at that point. So,
gosh, you know, that can be the most difficult time, because suddenly you're different and everybody in your world expects you to be a certain way. And when you stop doing that, it like rattles the cage, because then all of a sudden you're shining the light on everybody else's busy minds. And then they feel it, because they're like, why are you so calm? And why are you so different? And how are you making these better decisions now? And that rattles a lot of people.
Yeah, it actually can be problematic. But ultimately, you know, you're going to find yourself just being like, okay, if I have to lose this, I lose this. You know, you're going to we'll talk about how, you know, you start pruning the tree. Once you see here, this thing, Lisa, you just got to make peace of mind your priority in your life, your peace of mind. That is the best self-care you can possibly do, is to say, I will have peace of mind. I'm making a commitment to a meditation practice. And you know what happens as a result, and it happens organically, all the trauma and the drama is no longer even interesting to you, right? And you've learned to, the main point of meditation, I can't emphasize this enough, is to learn to regulate your emotions. I mean, yes, you'll feel calm, but it's not about just relaxing. This is a very active, engaging, participatory thing, meditation. You're not falling asleep. You're not just calming down. You're truly working to calm your mind, because the mind triggers the emotions, triggers the body, triggers the behavior. So we want to, and you'll also, like, it's kind of weird what's going to happen as a result. You'll stop taking yourself so seriously, and you will start. Yeah. Right. I mean, it's really fun when you're like, I'm not that important anymore, and I'm not going to engage in this or that. It's really amazing. And you bring to whatever pack you engage with, you're going to bring the alpha mind, that quiet, strong, clear wisdom mind. And the yappy puppy is not, you're not going to pay attention to that voice anymore, like your mother's voice telling you you're not good enough, or your boss, or whatever. They're all gone. Or mostly, nothing's ever gone. You've transformed it. That's not driving the bus. The alpha is now in charge of how you respond in the world. So that's, you know, when you bring that, eventually, yeah, it's going to change every environment that you're in. And the truth is, like, we've talked about this, you only change when things get absolutely intolerable, right? And for me, learning to meditate was all about, I was afraid I was losing my kids because I was so angry and kind of out of control. not kind of, they would say, oh my, you were out of control, right? Hurricane Phyllis. But because it would damage that those relationships, and I felt them pulling away, I committed to this. And then a couple decades later, when I got breast cancer, I recommitted to this, the concept of looking at the stress in my life, which included people, many people, right? So I kind of recommitted to it. So you'll find that you once you commit to the practice, you will go deeper and deeper with these big events that happen in your life. So,
Yeah, I agree. It can really highlight like losing the people in your life when you're always stressed out is scary, but also losing yourself is almost scarier. And that's what happened to me when I started really practicing stillness is I found myself like, this isn't who I am. And it was weird. It was a disconnection, and I was basically a slave to everybody but myself, and that's exhausting. And then you start building resentments, and then you're completely off your path, and then you wonder why your shoulders are sore or why dis-ease happens in the body. So it's powerful.
yeah, because in every realm in our life, and really what it is, it's uncom something's uncomfortable because we're taking our mask off. We all wear masks, we all play roles, right? And so in your family, maybe you were the punching bag all the time, or in the family, maybe you are the, the patient or the troubled one. We assign each other roles. There's the golden child, especially in the family systems, right? And with our friends, it's the same thing. She's the fun one. She's drunk. She's crazy. So what if when you change and you won't allow the family to kick you around anymore, and you don't feel like drinking and partying, and you sort of outgrow the version of yourself that formed those connections in the first place, right? Like in college, you're one kind of person, or in high school, or whatever, or and then you grow. And that's why a lot of marriages, fall apart, is because it's really hard to grow in the same direction. But when you prioritize peace of mind and you've worked hard to change your mind from like a destructive, loud, irritating puppy into a companion and an ally, so you're bringing that now into your relationships, you're going to start setting boundaries and not allowing people to do anything to disturb your peace of mind, and that's gonna create problems. Maybe not always, but what do you think? I mean, tell us about your experience, if you would, with like when you decided that you didn't want to go down this path of addiction any longer, and you were married at the time, right? So.
I wasn't married at the time, actually. I was in a relationship, living with someone, and I mean, my whole life changed. I chose sobriety, and I've lost that relationship. I lost that house. I lost essentially everything except for my dog and my clothes, and luckily I had family. But then I lost all the connections. So suddenly, like, my phone's blowing up and I'm on my phone all the time, and it was always destructive. It was always about drugs and partying. And you hang out with a crew of people who do the same thing because you enable each other, and suddenly I'm not doing that anymore, and I'm like, I don't have anybody in my life. So it was like absolutely crazy. I ended up having to leave the small town and move to the city and grow and go into rehabs. But it's like literally rebuilding your life from the ground up. It's you start with a foundation, and it's like these little pieces. You just keep putting little pebbles on your house to build it, and everything changes. I mean, that example, my family was like, thank God, But then I awakened again because I still was allowing people to walk all over me and really develop those boundaries. And that's when my life changed again, because again I had to leave another relationship, and people around me in that relationship didn't want me to, they wanted me to be healthy, but they didn't want me to be healthy because it's like they wanted to still have the party Lisa around because I would still party. And when I stopped doing that, they felt like they were being judged, or it was like I was not doing that anymore, so they felt uncomfortable doing it too because I was changing and becoming more healthy. So it's rattling because you can feel the energy on the outside, and you're like, ah, okay, this is what I need to do. They have to be okay with it, and I have to be okay with them not being okay with it. It was wild experiences.
It's wonderful, and it's a long process, just like your dog will grow
2 years
from puppy.
at least, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, nothing happens quickly, and that's what we want. And I get so angry when I see these, advertisements for wellness or meditation or silence, or manifesting that are like promising quick results. It's just awful. It's just monetizing something that should not be monetized, right? Because it's going to take time. But eventually, like, you're going to stop, being the person in the family who listens to all these conversations about worrying or conflict. You're just not going to do it. You're not listening to complaints anymore, or you're setting boundaries around that. I have a dear friend who, when she got divorced, all I heard all the time was her bitching about her ex-husband. Or, during the divorce. And finally, I limited it. I love her so much. I was like, you get 10 minutes. And we called it, I remember, the Daily Dickhead Report. Like, you get 10 minutes. And I set a timer and I let her do her thing. She just needed to be heard. And then we changed the subject. So you're going to learn how to manage that. And it's going to be very enlightening to see who sticks around and who doesn't. Like, I have a dear friend from childhood, who she became really a severe alcoholic, but kind of the fall down alcoholic, non-functional. She was married, had kids, but when she truly committed to recovery, and she did, in fact, sober up and started living awake instead of asleep and under the influence. Her husband didn't really like it anymore because he, in that relationship, he got to be the martyr. He got to be, oh, he's such a good husband. He puts up with her and he picks her up from the floor and blah, blah, blah. The enabler. The enabler sees themselves as, some kind of saint. Yes, my spouse is a drinker, but I'm sticking by her. And so when she gets healthy, he was like, this doesn't work for me because I'm not flashy and, I'm not the one who's getting all the praise anymore. So it's kind of strange how it will find its way into your family and friends. So
Yeah,
it's
you really, really, it magnifies what's not the right thing for you in your life anymore. Like you really becomes obvious, and it's loud and very, very obvious for sure.
it's, so there's that. I mean, that's your initial circle where you're bringing this now slowly, this well-trained puppy into the pack. And I don't know, puppies are so great when they listen to you and they're not shitting all over anymore. And it becomes, life does become better, but there will be that kind of pushback. And then, if you are a parent, I mean, to me, I don't really have regrets. I feel like we do the best we can on based on what we know at the time, but I wish I had been more conscious of the effect my overwhelm had on my boys, right? I was a single mom, three boys at the Jersey Shore. We always were like just barely making it financially, and they were, crazy, reckless, out of control. They were bo you know, they were boys. So, I mean, I wish I had approached parenting more consciously, but I didn't. And of course, they worked with that eventually, and we're all good now. But Jackie Onassis said, and I quote this in the book, and maybe some people are too young to, it was JFK's wife. She was first lady in the early 60s. And she said, if you bungle raising your children, I don't think anything else really matters in your life because you don't get a do-over, man. Like, you can get do-over sometimes with adults, but the stuff we inflict in our kids when they're in our home and kind of helpless against our parental anger or overwhelm or whatever it is, it really roots into their nervous system. So, when the kids were little, it was really fun. I surrendered to the mess and the chaos. I would definitely advise that if you got little kids, just surrender, lower your standards, just keep them happy and alive, and you're good to go. But when they turn into teenagers, they're like a live wire. It's having, like, it's really crazy the energy they can bring to the house. So, and dog moms, they don't consult social media to figure out how to raise their kids. They have an instinct. And we don't even allow ourselves, I feel for moms now with the influence of all this stuff on social media about how you should be doing. Really, you're their mom. You have the intuition. You just need to get quiet enough to hear the wisdom about what to do. And teenagers will put you in that position. They will force you to really take a look at yourself. How am I going to handle this adorable little girl who turn is turning into a wild maniac, right? It's very challenging. And we're so scared that we react. I was scared. And I think when you're really scared, you can react with anger. I mean,
Yeah.
underneath to me, underneath anger, there's what? There's fear, there's pain. It's one of the two. That's behind all anger. So if you can at least see that you're terrified. And I remember talking to one of my kids about this because, you know, the drinking, the pot, all that stuff was coming to be. And I was like scared to death and losing my mind. We talked about it, and I said, I'm just afraid you're gonna die. Like you know, even with just drinking, you're only 15, 16, you know, pot was everywhere. They did engage in, I think, a little more destructive stuff. Thank God everybody is good and healthy now, but it's a perilous time. And I was just honest with my son, that kid at the time, and I said, I'm just scared. Can you help me? Like, please help me figure out how we manage this, and kind of collaborated with him a little bit as to how we move forward. And that blows their minds when you have teenagers and you sit down with them and say, I'm scared. Can you help me figure out how we're going to do this? Like, I wish I had done more of that, you know? So, but the good news is I have changed as a result of my meditation practice. They have seen it and they love it and they appreciate it that you can teach an old dog new tricks, right? That you can. Even as you grow and they leave the house, you can change in order to keep the relationship not only sustainable, but like somebody they want to interact with, as opposed to what I had to do with my parents was to like push them to the edges because they drove me crazy and just tell them certain things and hide things so I wouldn't like poke the bear or whatever. Lots of people end up having to just manage their parents. And I didn't want to be the parent my boys had to just manage. I wanted to be a good support, a little source of wisdom. And, you know, somebody to laugh with and enjoy. And that has been the case because I changed. So I guess to the parents out there, I would say start, if you can start this practice with, you know, keeping in mind your kids when they're older and how you want to stay connected, this to me was a game changer for me.
What was it like when you were in the changing phase? Because I know that, like, if they're used to you a certain way and suddenly you're not reactive, and, you know, was it hard to rebuild that relationship, or what was that process like?
You know, that's a great question. It is a process, exactly. So, for a while there, we were all just trying to figure things out together. And we actually decided as a group, they were in their 20s at the time. We were at a wedding or something, and everybody got in a big fight. And we just said, I don't know, I think it was my oldest son who was like getting ready to propose to somebody. He said, I'm not bringing my girlfriend into this. So, if this is what our family's going to be, I'm not going to be a part of it. He was straight up. And I said, okay, so I think I'm still treating you like your kids, like your teenagers who don't know what you're doing. And I'm still acting like that mom. So I'm going to try to do better. And let's try to share important things. Like we just talked about it. And listen, we had ups and downs and ups and downs. And, you know, I still, you know, I could still get triggered. When I feel overwhelmed, I get really angry, you know, and but it doesn't happen that much anymore. And now that, you know, they have their own families, they understand how triggered your kids can just drive. Even the babies, when you have no sleep, it's so exhausting. So they see what I went through now. So they looked back, they understand the story better, they became more forgiving. I became, you know, just less invasive in their life. I don't need to be invasive in their life. I need to be on the sidelines. That's where I belong right now. And so, you know, it was a process and we had open communication. And when I did, you know, fuck up, which I do, I apologize and I'll say stuff like, I remember once I had my youngest grandchild at the beach for a couple hours and I was so hot and so tired, I became overwhelmed and my son reacted when I became overwhelmed. And we talked about it later. Like, look what happened. And I'm really sorry. And now I understand the effect of my overwhelm on you. Like, it's given me a lot to think about their feedback, but they're not afraid to give it to me, which is the most important thing. Like, how many people can't ever give their parents feedback, right? So it was totally worth it. But
I think it's important to note, like, to highlight that you may develop a meditation practice and you get into a routine, but you're still going to have times that are turbulent and it's not going to make you perfect and it's not going to change you into this saint. You're still going to be human, but you just learn to handle things a little bit differently. So there's been so many times where I've done things like recently that I'm embarrassed about. And you know, I have this, I've been practicing quieting my mind for like, I don't know, 15 years. And I literally had like a 2-year-old hissy fit 2 weeks ago. And I also remember when I was transitioning and trying to get out of that life that I knew I didn't want. I did give in to temptation a few times and, you know, went on a trip to Mexico and got really drunk. And then I felt so much shame about it. And then it was easier to get back on the path. So I think it's important to note that we are going to trip up, we are going to fall, we're all going to play in the mud and get real dirty, but then we can clean up again and get back to our meditation routine. Like, just because we stop doing it or just because we, you know, get off track doesn't mean we can't do it again. Like, it's not a perfect system.
Right. Absolutely. In fact, our motto as the kids grew as a family, our motto was, it's not how you fuck up, it's how you recover, you know?
Yeah.
And that's exactly it. And that's the case, say, in recovery, right? That relapse is part of the process, you right? That's how
Yeah.
you learn. And we have emotional relapses all the time. And that's okay. You just have to say, oh, shoot, I did that again. I don't want to do that anymore. Awareness is everything. That's what meditation grows in you, an awareness that you are much bigger than this yappy little shithead inside there just telling you you're no good and why didn't you do this and I got to do that. You quiet that voice and you're going to get a bigger perspective of who you are, but not until you are aware. And as we've talked about, you know, most folks are just succumbing to the voice and the digital stuff, like the what I call social media like digital fentanyl. Like, we're getting addicted to this craziness and we're not even aware of it. So awareness is what's going to happen as a result of consciously training that mind. And then another arena that we bring this kind of different perspective and different self is the workplace. That's huge. When you change,
Right.
right? Because you have certain roles, everybody's got a role at work, you know. There's the complainer, there's the this one, there's the one who's lazy, there's the, we all have these little archetypes in work. And what if it doesn't fit anymore? You know, and like for me, in the various jobs I've had, I've always liked the fighter, like the warrior. Tell Phyllis will do it. Like, they'd come to me, Phyllis, we got to fight them about this, that, or, you know, whatever change was. And I'd be like, I'll do it because my
Right,
ego
because
was all
you were a lawyer.
right. I was a lawyer, but even after I quit that was my stance. Like, I'll do it, I'll fight for you. And I didn't want to do that anymore in different, you know, as I
Yeah.
became a teacher and a healthcare worker and all the other things that I've done in my life, I didn't want to be the one they send into battle, and people didn't like it, you know. So when you change, and in the workplace, I mean, it might be that you have to quit your job. If your job actually, you know, insults, impairs, degrades your peace of mind, and lots of people do not have this option. Let me be clear. This is a white privilege kind of thing right here, right? To quit a job. Many, many people, I mean, of all backgrounds, just can't afford to do it because everybody's just trying to keep body and soul together right now. And some people work 3 jobs and they're not meaningful and it's horrible on their peace of mind, but they have to. But if you're in a job that's really killing your soul, it'd be great if you could find an, you may end up quitting. You may end up having to go somewhere else. But you'll often find the same little, I call them petty tyrants, that show up in every workplace, you know. So you can change your job, but you take your head, and you know, the same kind of folks are going to be in whatever situation workplace wise that you come into. But it is going to make a difference in your life when you
Yeah.
change and you bring that to where you work.
For me, it was like I was really on my own for a while. Can you relate to that? Like when you started changing, like you were just, it was really isolating. And then somewhat lonely. I mean, empowering but lonely sometimes, and just not being able to relate to anyone anymore is that's like the transition. It's like being in the void. It's like
Right.
All right, now you see things for what they are. You're calm under pressure. That's great, but then it's like, now what?
Right. You got to sort of find your people again, a new people or no people for a while. You're right. It is. And actually, to tell you, I mean, you're born alone, you die alone. Like life can be kind of a solitary journey. And in the process of transformation, yeah, you can feel like, oh, I don't have anybody who gets me. But so what? You get you. You're starting to get you. And once you get understand that you can live peacefully, you're just not going to want to give that up for the sake of being like the fun girl at the party. You know, it's just not worth it to you anymore. But you will start attracting people who are, you know, who like your new frequency. I don't mean to be all woo-woo, but you know, and dogs seem to find their way. You know, they won't hang out with another dog that's aggressive or bugging them. They know where to be, where they can find peace, and they seem to be able to
Yeah.
work it out.
You know what I'm picturing right now? I'm picturing the dog that's like got boundaries aggressively, but like dominantly, kind of like snap at the other dog, like leave me alone. And then that other dog kind of slinks away.
Yeah, and that's, you know, they're communicating and that's the message. But in general, you know, when you bring, say, let's say now we bring this well-trained dog, we're in past the family, the friends, the neighborhood, the workplace, and you know, you're out in the world now, just in general. What does that do? But you know, you look at dogs, they love everybody. They're so social generally, not every breed, but they really happily greet strangers, especially strangers of their own, you know, species. But they love, you know, many of them just love to meet anybody. My dogs, Chopper and Onyx, and my mom's dog, Jerry, like all these black labs, just loved everybody. Can you imagine if people went that way about the world? Like just happy to meet a stranger. How you doing? Like genuinely happy to be in the company of other humans. Can you imagine? I mean, it's almost mind-blowing to think
Is
that
the
we're
other day I was at the grocery store and I was standing in line and I turned around to talk to the person behind me and they were like mortified. It was like I did something wrong and I'm like, what's going on? I literally just like said, how are you doing today? And they looked at me like I was crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know, that can be cultural and geographic too. Like in the US, you know, like I tell people like on the East Coast where I am born and raised, people are kind, but they're not nice. Where out, you know, out West, they can be very nice, but not so kind. You know what I mean? So like in Philly, you get a flat tire. The guy will be like, why were you driving around on that? Well, you know, you're so stupid for having that. Give me that lug wrench. I'll fix it for you. You know? So there are different ways. It depends on where you live, sort of the way you can interact with people. But you know, just shine the light, you know, and to be, I mean, like you next time you see how dogs, like you know how when you're walking down the sidewalk and a dog's coming and you make eye contact and they like that. They sort of rejoice in meeting and being with other people. And then, you know, in your own way, in my way, let me put it this way, I feel connected to everything. So I am no, I don't have a moment of loneliness. I have a lot of solitude because I'm an introvert and I live alone and I love it. But I never ever anymore feel lonely because I feel like I'm connected to the pack, you know, the whole human, the pack of humans. Like we're all just in this together. We're all just trying to struggle through this kind of shit show of being stuck in this earth suit, right? So let's, you know, build a, I don't invest my happiness in any one individual or any even a group. Like it's, we're all part of the pack, and that brings me a lot of comfort anyway. So, yeah, that's how you change the world. Like everybody now is like, how do I, what can I do? Everything's so crazy. Just change yourself. And you see how it emanates, like, you know, like a wave or something, a ripple in a pond. It goes and goes and goes when your energy changes. So, definitely a worthwhile endeavor.
Yeah, it's so beautiful to see the people in your life changing, even if it's just a little bit. Like if you can influence people in the smallest bit, in the slightest, I mean, that's a win. And if we all are doing it, then that's going to influence everybody.
Yeah. And you know how like you see somebody who's really happy and peaceful or is joyful, like, oh, you're like, oh, I want some of that. You know, you just want that. So if you genuinely, authentically walk the world and, you know, joy is an absolute natural outcome of the process of calming your mind, you're going to feel joy. And like almost like, I mean, I feel it throughout the day because everything is You know, nature is so beautiful. Like the veil comes away from like playing all these games, and the noise is quiet in your head. Everything is different. So the outcome, when you prioritize your peace and you regulate your emotions and you're not reacting to everything, it's really worth it, you know, and it will change. It will change the world 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. So, where can people find more about you, and where can they find your book?
My book can be found on howtobeagooddog.com. That's the easiest way. You know, it's on Amazon and all the, you know, the sites. But if you go to my website, How to Be a Good Dog, just order it from there. That's the easiest way. And the podcast will be up there shortly as well, and other stuff to keep you engaged. And you know what I would love to ask our listeners to do? Like, if you want to think about which you're bringing your puppy to your, say, your family, your kids, your workplace, what interests you? Which of those roles are you most interested in, to what maybe the transition will be? And just email me and I'll send you that chapter. You know, so like if you're really interested on the chapter on parenting, just email me, Phyllis at howtobeagooddog.com, and tell me your little story and I'll send you the chapter for whatever it's parenting or changing the world or, you know, because we got to start moving in this direction and spreading the word, because it, you know, you don't need to set goals or manifest anything. You just need to start the process and commit to it. So
Yes,
there's.
well, thank you for being here today and talking to us about getting back out in the community after quieting our mind. And if you were to kind of summarize some tips for people to how to do that, imagine someone is like walking out their door for the first time and they're like, "All right, I got this." What are a few just little tips you can give them to get started with the socialization aspect?
So it's so important, and this would go across the board for everything, is to take that cleansing, that deep breath, to center and focus and, you know, balance yourself in any situation. It's a very physical process. This process is not just about your mind, but you got to remember that you have a body. So take that deep breath, and whatever your centering thought is like, I want to be a good dog. Like that, whatever the intention for the day is going to be, to whoever you bring yourself or wherever you bring yourself, just give yourself a couple of nice deep breaths, some a little bit of movement, and a commitment to peace of mind verbally in your own mind. And honestly, that will get you through. And you do that whenever you're caught in a situation where you feel like you're going to be reactive, is take that pause. We talked about the power of the pause. And that's, you know, while your parents used to say, you know, count to 10 before you get angry or whatever. So like the pause of not doing things immediately is really, really helpful as well. So you got to commit to slowing down. And so that's it. Like breathe, a centering thought, move the body a little, and you know, have a way to go through the day where your light is obvious to others.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for being here. What a great conversation.
Yeah, always.
Yes. And to our listeners, remember that your energy speaks louder than any word you will ever say. So imagine the calmest version of you walking into a large room and what that can do for the entire environment. You're more powerful than you think. Until next time, take care, everybody.